yesterday we finished with how the poor choices of David and others brought about the judgment of God, but eventually it resulted in the selection by God of the location of the future temple, the very temple where Jesus and the apostles would minister and from which the church would basically be birthed. Now, David is old. He is probably in his 37th year of kingship whenever this event happened that we talked about yesterday. That would put him right around 67 years of age. He's only got about 3 years left of his physical life. And so David knows that time is of the essence. And he is going to really start working a lot with Solomon to get him ready to become the peaceful man of God's prophecy that is going to build the temple and be the next king of Israel. It may be that David has not clearly communicated that just yet. And that is going to result in a little bit more turmoil before we finally settle down into the proper transition of power from David to Solomon. So let's look, first of all, at 1 Kings, because we finished 2 Samuel last time, and see what David's physical situation is right around this time. We know that he wasn't able to go out to war anymore because he'd lost some of his fighting ability and his commanders were afraid he was going to get killed on the battlefield. But now we discover that he's got other physical issues that are getting the best of him. So 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 1. Now King David was old and advanced in years, and although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. So something's happening to him where he is not feeling warm, even when he is covered up with normal coverings. So verse 2, therefore his servant said to him, let a young woman be sought for my lord the king, and let her wait on the king and be in his service. Let her lie in your arms that my lord the king may be warm. Now, this feels weird to us because we're not in this same culture of this time period. So, the wives that David already have, they would be insulted, strangely enough, with the idea of being expected to be a nursemaid to the king and to basically lay around with him under covers to try to keep him warm whenever he's having one of these situations of feeling very chilled. Because after all, they're all queens and maybe even princesses or business women that David has been married to. So, how do you deal with the need that David has to have body heat to try to remedy his situation? Well, he's not going to have any of his servants lie with him, because that would be totally inappropriate, especially for a male to lay down with him, or a woman that he's not married to lay down with him. So what they recommend is a culturally indicated thing. You need to marry a young woman specifically to become your nursemaid, not for any type of sexual connections, not for any type of treaties or any type of business dealings, but just to be your intimate caretaker, that she understands that's what she's signing on for. And that's going to require marriage. And so, verse 3, they sought for a beautiful young woman throughout all the territory of Israel, and they found Abishag the Shunammite and brought her to the king. And the young woman was very beautiful. She was of service to the king and attended to him, but the king knew her not, meaning he had no sexual connection with her. So this woman is a nurse that is going to be intimately connected with Jesus, with David, but not for the normal marital relations. She's going to sleep with him during his naps and at night as part of the body heat, and she will be the one feeding him and taking care of all of his physical needs, because it could be that he's also got other issues here that he needs attended to. So that's all going to be important later, because she will then become a pawn in a ploy to seize power after David is gone. Okay, so just kind of file her away as somebody very, very special in David's life at the end that will then come up into the story later. Okay, now, let's shift over to 1 Chronicles chapter 22. We know David's got some physical issues that he's wrestling with. He's losing his ability to really be a strong and forceful man. So, verse 1 of chapter 22 in 1 Chronicles. This is the tail end of the last story where David selects, at God's direction, the site for the future temple. David said, "Here shall be the house of he who is God, and here the altar burnt offering for Israel." So the place that he put the stone altar, that's going to be where the altar burnt offering for the temple is going to be located. And then to the west of there will be the shrine building. So all of that is decided already up on the Temple Mount. And I believe that the place where the Golden Dome, the Dome of the Rock, is located now, has got to be fairly close to where the first shrine building was built. It might be over the exact same spot. The rock that they point to underneath the dome, the rock that is in the Dome of the Rock name, that would probably have been underneath the raised platform of the temple. I don't believe that the Jewish tradition, which says that that is the rock on which the Ark of the Covenant stood inside the temple, is accurate, because every indication is that the temple was raised up higher than the platform area that we see today. But the first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians, and then when the replacement one was built, probably with a raised up platform area, it also was torn down. Not one stone was left upon another, according to the prophecies of Jesus, when the Romans dismantled it. So anyway, the temple is going to be located somewhere in that general vicinity of the Dome of the Rock building. Verse number 2. David commanded to gather together the resident aliens who were in the land of Israel, so non-Israelis who are living in the land. And he set stone cutters to prepare dress stones for building the house of God. So he knows that the temple is going to be built in just a few more years, because he's very close to the end of his life, and once he's gone, the temple can be started by Solomon. Verse 3, David also provided great quantities of iron for nails for the doors of the gates and for clamps, as well as bronze in quantities beyond weighing, and cedar timbers without number, for the Sidonians and the Tyrians brought great quantities of cedar to David. So David is starting to amass, and he's actually been doing it a little while now, starting to amass all the raw material that's going to be needed to build this massive temple. And here's his thinking, verse 5. For David said, Solomon, my son, is young and inexperienced. By my estimation, and according to at least one or several Jewish traditions, Solomon was about 15 years old when he was declared crown prince, and we're about to see that happen. And since David dies about 3 years after that, then Solomon will be roughly 18 years of age when he takes over and starts as the solo king of Israel. So David is thinking about the fact that Solomon is a young man. He doesn't have lots of experience, but this is a big deal that he's going to make as his major project. So Solomon, my son, is young and inexperienced. The house that is to be built for he who is must be exceedingly magnificent, of fame and glory throughout all lands. I will therefore make preparation for it. So David provided materials in great quantity before his death. So David is going to design the temple at the direction of the Holy Spirit. That is clear from other passages. But he is also going to collect together everything that he knows is going to be needed as the pool of resources out of which to build this magnificent house. So David's going to use these last few years of working with Solomon to get this job done. So verse number 6 is one of those clear first times that David talked to Solomon about it. So he called for Solomon, his son, and he charged him to build a house for he who is the God of Israel. David's been thinking about this for a long time, because remember, God had given him a promise that one of his sons yet to be born, one of his sons who would be peaceful, would be the one that would build the house that David wanted to build for God. David named this son Shlomo, or Solomon, which means peaceful. So David has anticipated for about a decade and a half now that this young man was going to be the one to fulfill God's word of building the temple. So David said to Solomon, my son, I've had it in my heart to build a house to the name of he who is my God. But the word of he who is came to me saying, you have shed much blood and have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name because you have shed so much blood before me on the earth. Now this is the place that I referenced several sessions ago, when I said that the reason David was told by God at the time that while his desire to build the house was a good desire, he was not the right man for the job because he'd been a warrior, because he'd killed so many people. He had caused so much lifeblood to go out into the ground. And God said to him, I want somebody different than that to build this temple. So now David is repeating what God told him back at that time. Verse number 9. Behold, a son shall be born to you who shall be a man of rest, or a man of peace. And I will give him rest from all his surrounding enemies, for his name shall be Shlomo, or peaceful. And I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. He shall build a house for my name. He shall build my son, be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish his royal throne in Israel forever. So this is why David named Solomon Solomon. And that is also why David has been working with Solomon as the future king of Israel. But he's not made that perfectly clear to everybody else, because everyone else, as we will soon see, are expecting that the eldest surviving son will be the next king of Israel. At first they thought it was Amnon. Then after he was dead, they thought it was Absalom. And now that he is dead, they think it is Adonijah or Adonijah. But David tells Solomon, "You're the guy." Verse number 11. "Now, my son, he who is be with you, so that you may succeed in building the house of he who is your God, as he's spoken concerning you. Only may he who is grant you discretion and understanding, that when he gives you charge over Israel, you may keep the law of he who is your God." Now notice verse number 12. David plants in Solomon's heart the idea that he needs to depend on God for discretion and understanding to govern the people of Israel. Because when David is dead, and God asks Solomon, "What do you need most?" Solomon will say exactly that. "I need discretion and understanding so that I can govern the people of Israel." Verse number 13. "Then you will prosper in all you are careful to observe the statutes and the rules of he who has commanded Moses for Israel. Be strong and courageous. Fear not. Do not be dismayed. With great pains I have provided for the house of he who is 100,000 talents of gold." Now, this is what he already has on hand. Now, a talent is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 75 pounds. So 100,000 talents of raw gold, you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,750 talents of gold, or excuse me, tons of gold. 3,750 tons of gold that's stored at Jerusalem and around, just waiting. This is stuff that David has captured over the years of his military victories and the things that he's collected in tribute. And then he's got 10 times that amount in silver, 1,000,000 talents of silver, which of course would be 37,500 tons of silver. And that's stored around in the area as well. And then bronze and iron beyond weighing. There's so much of those materials that they're not even keeping a record of how much there is. For there was so much of it. Timber and stone, too, I have provided. So he's already got things being quarried. We read about that earlier. He's got the resident aliens out there working the quarries. And got people up in Tyre and Sidon that are harvesting out of the timber of the cedars of Lebanon and the cypresses of Lebanon and getting all that material ready to go. To these you must add. So David thinks that's not going to be enough yet. You're going to need more. Because David has in mind to build this grand structure of the temple up there on the top of the hill overlooking Jerusalem. The hill just to the north, the Temple Mount area. That's going to become the religious center and the royal center of Solomon's kingdom. And it's going to be a showpiece for the world. If it had not been destroyed by the Babylonians, I believe that the temple and palace complexes of the Jewish people would have been counted among the wonders of the ancient world. I'll say this multiple times as we talk about the temple. The temple is by far the most expensive building per square foot ever built on the face of the earth. The raw materials themselves, not counting all the labor and the expertise that was put into putting them together, just the raw material themselves in modern day buying power would have exceeded $3 trillion worth. That's an amazing amount of precious materials being brought into one spot. Verse number 15. Still David talking to Solomon. You have an abundance of workmen, stone cutters, masons, carpenters, all kinds of craftsmen without number, skilled in working gold, silver, bronze, and iron. Arise and work, he who is be with you. Now, the next part of this, I believe, we'll have to hold off until after David makes it clear that Solomon is going to be the guy, although he may have shared it with some selected leaders. But why don't we just go ahead and read it ahead of time here. David also commanded all the leaders of Israel to help Solomon his son, saying, "Is not he who is your God with you? And has he not given you peace on every side? For he's delivered the inhabitants of the land into my hand, and the land is subdued before he who is and his people. Now set your mind and heart to seek he who is your God. Arise and build the sanctuary of he who is God, so that the ark of the covenant of he who is and the holy vessels of God may be brought into a house built for the name of he who is." So David wants the Israeli leadership to know, once I'm dead, you guys need to jump on top of building the temple. Because the only thing that's stopping it from happening right now is I'm still alive. It can't be built while I'm still the king. But the materials are already being gathered together. You'll be able to add some more stuff to it. You're not going to have to worry about enemies because I've resolved that. And David had. I mean, once this latest little problem with Absalom and Sheba and the Philistines were taken care of, and they were taken care of pretty quickly, things went back to the peaceful boundaries that David has established earlier in his kingdom, where you've got the promised land proper, surrounded by all these other areas that David has brought to either peaceful terms of alliance, or he has put his tribute needs upon those areas out of a solution of the war that those people had done against David, and so David defeated them and then required of them to pay him tribute. So all the way from that bend in the Euphrates River down to the borders of Egypt, down to the Gulf of Aqaba, and then with the Mediterranean on one side and the open expanse of the Arabian Desert on the other, David's kingdom is well established in peace. And so he is expecting Solomon and all of the leadership to be able to focus completely on the building of the temple next. Okay, in the last 3 minutes we've got, let's set the stage for the next story, which is another coup attempt. This one is found in 1 Kings chapter 1, starting at verse number 5. And I believe that it happens in this 37th year of King David, probably somewhere in close proximity to the fall Feast of Tabernacles, maybe even the Feast of Trumpets, which was kind of the kickoff to the agricultural year, and may have also been kind of the anniversary of the king's rise to power in the fall of each year. 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 5. Now, Adonijah, and that's the shortened form of the divine name preceded by the word for my Lord, Adonai. So He who is my Lord. That's what his name literally means. So that's the name that David gave to this young man 30-some years ago, because he's got to be in his middle or early 30s at this time. So Adonijah, the son of Haggith, that's David's wife, who is the father or the mother of this child, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." So he's the oldest surviving son of David. And so he assumes, "I'm the crown prince." And so he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. You may remember that Absalom did the exact same thing. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, "Why have you done thus and so?" So David had not challenged Adonijah in some of his bad thinking or behavior, which is never a good choice. He was also a very handsome man, and he was born next after Absalom. Verse 7, he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar the priest, and they followed Adonijah and helped him. So Joab, the long-term commander of the United Armies of Israel, a very powerful man in the kingdom, he is all on board with Adonijah coming to the throne now. And apparently so is Abiathar, who has been a priest in David's presence ever since the last couple of years of Saul's reign. So we're talking about over 40 years this man has been a supporter of David. But he's throwing in his support for Adonijah as well. And so this is going to be what triggers David publicly declaring that Solomon is his choice as crown prince and as the next king of Israel. And that is the story for the next time we get into God's Word.